Hey everyone, it's Dacia. I know, it's been a while. To be fair, I've been super busy. I just finished moving, and then there's been work and parkour classes and that international spy mission I had to do real quick. I've been training for a race, writing a book, I have a kitten. Anyway, to make up for my absence, I have two exciting presents for you. First is the epic episode that you're about to hear, wherein our guest, Stefan Deneuve, gives a complete overview of the entire history of French classical music in one episode. Amazing, right? And for your next present, well, you're going to have to wait until our mid-show break for that one. For now, don't forget to subscribe to, rate, and review our podcast wherever you listen. And okay, I think that's it. Let's go. There's a rumor going around that classical music can be hoity-toity. But here in the classical classroom, we beg to differ.
Beethoven 5.
The idea that classical music is a zone where we have to feel restricted or we have to act in a certain way, you know, that's not going to be helpful going forward.
Isaiah is shaking with excitement.
There's just so many great parts of the opera.
He asked me to play his favorite spot in the first movement of the Brahms. And then he said, I started using those licks in my guitar solos.
How to be classical music rock stars, because there's not enough of that in this business.
Occasionally, I would plug in the mandolin to my distortion pedals.
I don't change my voice.
And talking to classical music.
I'm playing classical music now. I mean, it's the same 12 notes. That's what's so cool about it.
I'm Dacia Clay, a classical music newbie, and I'm trying to learn all I can about the music. Come learn with me and the classical music experts I invite into the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Dacia Clay, and talking to me from Brussels, where he is the music director of the Brussels Philharmonic, is Stefan Deneuve. He's also music director of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, principal guest conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra, and director of the Center for Future Orchestral Repertoire. Oh my God, I'm out of breath just saying that. He's very passionate about French music, including emerging French music, and he's got a recent piece of exciting news, which is that he's going to be conducting the 2020 Nobel Prize concert. Stefan, welcome to the Classical Classroom.
Thank you, Dacia. Happy to be with you.
So, first of all, congratulations on the awesome news. How did that come to be with the Nobel Prize concert?
Well, I do have a long-time relationship with the Royal Stockholm Philharmonic Orchestra, who usually plays for this great ceremony. But it's really an honor and a privilege that this year they ask me, following a great list of fantastic conductors, to do this prestigious concert, which is on TV at 8 o'clock in all Sweden. It's very exciting.
That is very exciting. I didn't even know that there was an orchestra concert to be conducted, because I guess I've never watched this, but it's like a huge deal. And also, okay, another question for you. I was out of breath just listing all of the jobs that you're doing. Why hold down so many jobs at once as a conductor? when do you sleep?
Because I have a hard time to say no. I love music. And those great opportunities came to me, and indeed I added them. But no, it's possible. I mean, a lot of conductors have one orchestra in the US and one in Europe, so I'm also having that. And apart from suffering from jet lag, I really enjoy to make music all over the world and just to do that all the time. So yes, I don't sleep a lot, except now, of course, because of these terrible times.
Yes. This horrible pandemic situation really has to stop. I'm going to vote for that. But today, since we've got you trapped at home, the lucky thing is that I have you here to teach me all about French music. So before we get into you teaching me the finer points about French music, tell me why it is that French music, like, why do you just like it? What about it appeals to you?
Well, I don't want to sound patriotic, because I love the world and I'm a European first, but it is true that I am French, as certainly you could hear from my little accent. And I happen to conduct all over the world, indeed, actually much more abroad friends than in France. And then I realized that a lot of people were expecting me to have very clear ideas about the French style. And I I started to really study it extremely thoroughly and try to really know what it is, what is distinctive. And I got totally passionate about indeed trying to explain and trying to communicate the French styles to orchestras all over the world. That's why I love that, and that's why I'm so focused on this. But that said, I still conduct music from every country and from every period of music. I have a big appetite for everything. But being a French, it was quite natural to have a special relationship with this culture.
Well, okay, that's actually a great place to start. So what is French style? Like, where did it start? What were its origins?
Well, I would say, let's start with all the words that could describe it over the whole history of music. So what you hear often about French music is that it is colorful, it is light, there is transparency, there's a lot of sensuality with complex harmonies. It has a kind of visual style, it's very articulated, very clear, it's elegant, it's concise, it's humor. So you hear all of that, and I have to say, this has certainly to do, just to start with the personality of French people. In whole history, I think we do have this kind of qualities in our way to behave and to speak to each other. And if you may, to just hear something which is absolutely quintessential, actually, if I may say this word well, quintessentially, that's the word.
Quintessentially.
Yeah, you got it. French. I would like to just propose you a very short excerpt from a melody of Poulenc. It's a song that he composed, and he's playing himself in this recording, the piano, with his musical partner, Pierre Bernac. It's called La Grenouillère. It's about actually a place in the 19th century where people went to a canoe, you know, to... It was painted by Renoir, it was painted by Monet, and somehow this little song just gives you a pastel feeling of what French style is. So let's start with
that. Yeah, let's hear it. Ni le dimanche, ni les jours de la semaine, ni les peintres, ni mots passants. Promène bras nus sur leur canot avec des femmes. I feel like you could have Edith Piaf singing that song and it would feel totally right.
You're absolutely right. There's a huge tradition of French songs, and it has been always the case in history. You know, we if you go in the medieval time, you have Jeanne Quint, for instance, who wrote a lot of songs where it was difficult to realize if it is actually just popular music or already kind of classical music the way we mean it. And as you could hear, it has to do with the French language. Mm-hmm. The French language is extremely colorful, has very stable vowels. You know, in America, we say wonderful. You have a lot of tonic accent. You have a lot of change of colors in the vowels. And for us, it's very precise, like a button you push. There is A, E, I, O, U. Mm-hmm. And right away there, you have a sense of very clear, different rainbow colors. And I think a lot of the French style comes from the French language itself and from the origin of the French language, which is Latin.
That's really interesting. Yeah, because when I think about people speaking in French, I think about like a lot like Italian, where I like you see people like speaking with their hands, and it's very like expressive. It's very...
Well, and it's the fact is, in Italian, which is a sister language from French, you have a lot of tonic accent, you know, and French doesn't have that. French is much more horizontal. Mm. And this is a key thing. You know, normally in Italian, indeed, in German, in many languages, you have those tonic accents, insisting on something. And if you hear French people speaking, what you hear actually is blah, 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 blah. You have this kind of very even rhythm of sounds coming, and without this direction to a main point, to a tonic accent.
I see, yeah.
And this comes from a very, very early time as well. I think the birth of the French style comes from vocal music, church music, long time ago.
What's a good example of something like old, like where we can first hear that thing that you're talking about?
That's a good question. Actually, if you may, maybe we should compare to have a clear view about the differences. Compare two very conflicting, sometimes literally conflicting culture in the past, which is the German culture and the French culture. And so if you hear actually German church music from, let's say, the 16th century, for instance, you would hear a music influenced by Protestant and Calvinism music, and it is very vertical. Actually, it's a lot of chorals, which means a lot of people singing the same word at the same time, and it forms very clear harmonies. And to be together, you need to create a sense of pulse that help you to have a clear direction to the next beat, to the next chord. And I would like to listen first to that, to the German style of choral music, with maybe a piece by Joachim Decker.
Okay. Okay, and you're sort of saying that this is like a vertical sound because
yes,
it's all very like columnar, like everything is sort of like everybody's at the same time. That's what you mean?
Exactly. So that's a German style.
Okay.
And it obliges you to have a clear pulse to have it together.
Okay.
So now let's compare that with the French church music, almost of the same time, a bit before the Gregorian music, which is totally monodic. It's actually one melody, and it's totally horizontal. Let's hear Guillaume de Machaut, for instance.
Let's hear it. Okay, I think I hear what you're talking about. So this music, this French music, is like sort of moving all over the place as it's going along.
Yes, it's
like
somehow
a river.
Much more free. It's much more like you would draw a lot of tiny little change of articulation, It is not actually with a regular pulse. And it doesn't have this kind of vertical aspect. And already there, you can see the birth of this kind of horizontal French style where everything is more like a drawing than actually something with a clear vertical pulse.
I see. It's kind of like less chained up. It's sort of like free to move about.
Yes. It's,
whereas that sort of German music that we were hearing is very like tick, 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 tick. It's sort of...
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it sort of fits perfectly, I would say, with that's a little bit of a cliché, but still clichés sometimes have a real origin, with the fact that German culture likes organization, likes, people follow the rules.
Yeah.
And French people, I'm afraid, are much more undisciplined and have this kind of free way. And already there, in this church music, you can feel that the Gregorian music and if we were listening to more polyphonic music, you would still hear that it's actually quite not always following a rhythmical pattern that would just create a pulse. And,
yeah.
And that is already in the style of French music. Also, you certainly know that the French people are the only people, actually, with Russian, who actually decided to use and sing with the French solfège, you know, the...
Wait, solfège? What's that?
Solfège is when you name the notes. So do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, do.
Okay.
You know, so it comes from Italy, of course, and it was from Latin music. It was ut instead of o, ut, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, do. And when I sing music, since I'm a child, I learn to use the name of the note. And when I vocalize with do, mi, sol, fa, mi, fa, re, mi, fa, sol, la. And there as well, from a very early age, all French people have the habit that every note has a color, because O, Do is not the same as Re, E, or Mi, E. And so I think it influenced a lot when, for instance, German music, to compare, for instance, or also American music, you vocalize on one sound, because you don't say A, B, C, D. You don't do that. But all my childhood, for instance, I permanently just use solfège, and it's always a surprise sometimes American orchestras when I say, like, okay, like, let's take this phrase, like, do, re, si, do, mi, re, do, re, si, do, fa, sol, do, re, si, do, mi, re, do, la, fa, mi, fa, mi, re, mi, sol, si. I can solfège extremely fast, because it's in the way of speaking as well, to speak very fast in French, yeah, and to articulate very clearly, very quickly. So I think the birth of French style comes from the church music, the Gregorian music, and from the solfège, the way to call the name, the notes.
Interesting. You did that so fast. That was amazing.
Well, I have a little, cool. I have a little anecdote, which sometimes when I do the Ravel, Davis and Chloé, there is a great effect at the beginning with the clarinets and the strings later and the flutes. And I always want the orchestra to play very precisely. So I said, oh, please, can you please do mi, do, re, la, do, fa, la, mi, fa, la, do, re, mi, do, re, la, do, fa, la, mi, fa, la, do, re, mi, do, re, do, sol, si, mi, sol, si, do, re, mi, do, re, do, sol, si. And I really don't do it to show off, but it did happen that some orchestras, I remember once the Chicago Symphony, just applauded me, like, totally, genuinely, because they were amazed by the speed of mi, do, re, do, fa, la, mi, fa, la, do, re, mi, do, re, fa, la, mi, fa, la, do, re, mi. But okay, that's actually just in my culture.
That is amazing. So basically, everyone in music in France can do that. But
yes,
you have dazzled Americans. Okay. So I want to go back to something that you were talking about. And like, I've a lot of people and a lot of musicians and composers and conductors that I've talked to talk about color in music. And I kind of like just intuitively understand what you mean there. But is there a way to describe it for maybe somebody who doesn't, who's like, color, like, this is music, this is audio, there's nothing visual about it? Like, how do you...
It's an excellent question, because indeed it's quite strange that we always use metaphors to speak about something. But I would say it's a little bit like when you describe a wine.
Yeah.
You know, you would speak about the different flavor, but also the texture of the wine, and you will be also influenced by the color itself of the wine. And I think it applies to music very well. I often compare music to good wine, I'm afraid, and I like both. And so the fact is, as I said before, from an early age, there was this idea of coloring the notes, coloring the articulation of the notes with little appoggiatura, you know, these little notes that you add that give some coloration of the attacks of the notes. And then it evolved in the way you would use a group of instruments. And very early in the Baroque music, you know, in the 17th century, when people started to really use big group of instruments, they started to organize these instruments in a way that you would have a variety of sounds, a variety of timbres. And I suppose as early as in the Louis XIV period, with Lully, the famous composer Lully, was Italian, but actually really stayed so long in France that we consider him a French. And he was right away from that time starting to really use the groups, the woodwinds, the percussion, the strings, in a way that would just, like a painter, change, yeah, you know, the color. So maybe you want to hear some of it.
Yeah, I do. But so if I can maybe try to articulate what you're getting at. So basically, it's kind of like if you're making a painting and you've got like these colors sort of on your palette, and then you would mix certain colors together to get other colors. So you're saying
exactly.
That like composers are sort of doing that with the instruments and with the timbre and with, so it's the way that you mix the different sounds to get
exactly.
Different moods and modes and stuff like that.
And I would not say, of course, that it's only French, but let's say we have certainly from already the Baroque style a particular focus on this way of offering variety, you know, using timbres that are very different, that really will not mix in a way that would make everything the same brown color, like when we were children and we mixed too many colors together and everything become one dark color and that's it. We always try to organize it that you could actually hear the different colors together and to create this big palette that you can still see. So it's not... Mm-hmm. Only mixing. Let's maybe hear the March des Combattants of Lully to see what
okay.
I mean.
All right. This piece sounds very patriotic.
So here is using the woodwinds,
uh-huh.
And you can hear. And then the full orchestra with, of course, the trumpet. And then adding suddenly the piccolos and flutes.
Yeah.
Now the strings.
So they're all, yeah, I see. It's all sort of like, you could almost say different flavors too. Like sort of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly the right way to describe it.
Okay.
To just give you different flavors and have different colors offered with the same kind of material of music, the same melodies. But then suddenly you add some flutes to give some harmonics high up. Sometimes you remove and you just keep the percussion. And so it's really using indeed the forces that you have in front of
I
you
see.
As a palette.
Well, what's another good example of, because that color to me, if I were describing it, would be, I actually don't know what color I would say it was, but it just sounded very like patriotic and like, I don't know, like bombastic, you know, and like,
oh, yes.
Like that was sort of like the major theme going on in that piece, and then there were like little breaks for sort of like side notes, you know. But how would you describe that?
Well, the fact is, very early in the Baroque time in France, people started to use very poetic titles and try to describe them in music. So, for instance, this is the March des Combattants, so basically the march of the soldier. So that's why you heard this kind of vindicative music and this kind of almost war-style energy. And so the music was trying to illustrate in a visual way what the words are and what was a... And you can go much more extreme. And I would like to offer you an example which is totally incredible. I'm fascinated by that. It's an excerpt from a ballet without text, without words. That's how it's called officially. Written in 1737 by Jean Ferry Rebel. And it's called Les Éléments, describing the beginning of the earth and the...
Oh. Like the elements.
Earth. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
Earth, fire, water, wind. And it starts with a chaos, the earth at the start. And what I found fascinating is that totally against any musical rule of the time of harmony and Rebel actually use the orchestra he has in front of him as indeed a way to describe in a musical way the visual aspect of a chaos. And he will actually use a D minor chord, but all the notes. It's maybe the first cluster ever written in history of music. And please listen to this crazy beginning, which is so dissonant. I mean, it could have been a 20th century music for its kind of very violent and totally unabashedly imaginative way to describe the chaos.
Okay.
Here is Les Éléments.
I just have to say, I think Stravinsky maybe borrowed a little bit from this piece with the beginning of the Rite of Spring, right? Like that's like that, like the chaos.
Exactly, the repetition. And here you hear the flutes describing the water. And then you will hear the strings doing the fire against the water. Voilà. The fire. And then some wind, and it is indeed just an incredible piece showing that the focus already then in 1737 was on the visual description.
Ooh, that is so
through
crazy.
Music.
Because, like, I mean, like, you know, like Stravinsky, that Rite of Spring, like, for listeners who don't know, this was like this crazy modernist piece, like audiences went bonkers when they first heard it because it was like this it was considered very new and shocking, you know. But this piece that was written in like the early 1700s was basically already doing that. That's crazy.
Yeah, two centuries before,
actually
the same kind of effects were already happening. And that's quite fascinating indeed. And I'm glad you made the parallel with the sacral dance, I suppose, the mm-hmm. end of the Rite of Spring, because it is certainly comparable in its violence and description.
Well, and its inventiveness too, because that's
like
that whole idea of chaos captured in music. Like that somebody was already thinking about that in the 1700s. That's so
and
cool.
And it continues. And I would say a French composer will always try to use the orchestra in the most imaginative way. And it's quite interesting that all over the years, the French music concentrated always more on something describing the world, describing nature, more than speaking about the man and the philosophy. Mm-hmm. It's quite interesting that German music, for instance, will always kind of concentrate on the very pure idea of a music expressing the soul torments, the you know, the metaphysical question, and while we French somehow were more interested to describe something like in a painting way, you know, in a visual way, and for me the birth of the really great specific French orchestration is Berlioz. That is, of course, the man.
Oh well, we have to hear some of that.
Well, Berlioz, of course, very early, I mean, at the time where Beethoven basically just finishing the Ninth Symphony, Berlioz actually very soon write a piece which is incredible if you compare to that, the Symphony Fantastique, which has a real story once again. There is a scenario. It's once again a kind of drama without words. And it's incredible to imagine that Berlioz will invent something so radical. And for instance, if you hear the beginning of the fifth movement called the Songe une nuit de sabbat, mm-hmm. Berlioz will kind of describe a horror movie scene with witches on their broom flying, and you will hear some evil, some demonic creatures laughing hysterically. And where did he find that? I mean, it's like psychedelic music. So let's hear.
Yeah.
Already this line of cello double bass sounds like a bad digestion, if I may say. And then you have this kind of pterodactyl, like strange little... And this monstrous laughter. and the witches passing by, and then with a glissando, like if you hear a Formula One passing, you know. And back to this tremolo, very important for the background. And once again, this very witchy laugh. It's crazy, huh?
It is. So this is really interesting to me. The point that you brought up about the difference between, say, French and German composers, where like the French, it seems like were from a really, really early time, like looking outward at the world and describing feelings about what they were seeing around them, as opposed to starting inward, like sort of starting from that place and thinking about thoughts. It's more feeling based. It's more like emotional.
Emotional, you can have emotion in many different ways, of course, but definitely impressions is the right word.
Yeah.
And look, it's fascinating that you have Bach writing these very abstract pieces, you know, the preludes, the fugues, this very kind of sonatas, very formal. Yeah. And it's fantastic. I mean, for me, Bach, you are Sebastian Bach. I mean, if music was only Bach, it would have been still enough. I mean, it's fantastic. And it's very abstract. You can play Bach with, of course, a harpsichord as it was written, or you can play it with a modern piano. You can play it with a group of saxophone, of strings, or what. It will still sound good because the music is actually in the notes itself and in the reflective aspect of the notes. While at the same time of Bach, you had people like Couperin or something like that who wrote pieces that were always describing with very poetic title, Les Barricades Mystérieuses, full of impressions music. And I think I say the word impressionism. It's what, of course, often people think about when they think about French art. They think about the impressionist painter, and they often think about the impressionist music that was composed from the very end of the 19th century and beginning of 20th, which is a golden era of the French style, because it's really a very iconic way of showing what French style is.
So I think most of us understand what impressionism is when we're thinking about paintings. They're very sort of, like, often when you look at the paintings, they look kind of blurry in a way. They're not the clear images that painters before had been making, but they're more like visual impressions of a scene. They use a lot of sort of muted colors, so it's almost like a blur. It gives you a real, like an impression of a scene as opposed to a clear, distinct image. So how do you know it when you hear it in music?
Well, the fact is, you're absolutely right. To give these impressions, what the painter did is use this little touch of different colors. And basically, color exists because of light, right? Hmm. It's the light itself that actually allow colors to exist, and it's the colors then reflecting the light that give moods and the emotions of the different moods. And of course, it's fascinating to see that somebody like Monet painted famously, you know, the Cathedral de Rouen or those so many times, just changing the hour of the day to get just a different mood thanks to the light itself and the change of the colors due to the light. And what happened is that in music, it's not literally painting, but suddenly there is a moment in time where it's very interesting to see that the goals, the expressive goal, are the same. How to show in music the lights. And then what, for instance, Maurice Ravel did was to use little waves of colors that were not very clear, because it's a lot of notes very fastly played, and mixing them with, let's say, glissandos of harp and creating waves at different speed in order to express the light. And when you hear the beginning of Daphnis and Chloe, the famous big ballet of Ravel, a wonderful masterwork, you will really physically feel the dawn and feel actually the arrival of light, like the time okay. right before the sun arrive on the horizon.
Yeah, let's hear that.
Mm-hmm. So you hear it in the bass?
Yeah.
A very slow tone.
Oh, yeah. I almost very didn't slow, even hear
at
that.
The same time,
I was distracted by the...
And then,
windows.
So you have this darkness, but then a lot of fast notes in the flute and clarinet,
uh-huh.
and the harmonies giving you this kind of obscure feeling, getting more and more light, and then it starts from the bass, contrafagot, and then the violins play the bird, the flute, all the birds, and the melody. Goes in the cellos, violas, it gets higher, more birds, nature awakes, and then a wave of light arrives in the high strings.
Wow, it like really, and like, it may be because you're telling me the story as it's going, but this music really sounds like a story, like a scene, like I just walked up on a scene.
Yes, it gives you the impression of a natural event,
mm-hmm.
of nature, and yet, look, it's singing so magnificently. There is this beautiful melody now in the violas. Help, a counter melody in the cellos. So it's not only descriptive, of course. There is really a big romantic, somehow, melody style, but always with a purpose. It's so visual, it's so descriptive, yet at the same time it's music. So it has a structure, it has a big melody,
mm-hmm.
and I love this Daphnis Chloe. I mean, I think it's
beautiful.
So special.
Yeah, it's like... It's almost like you sort of walked into a painting or something.
And all the time you hear in the background, it's blurred by fast notes.
Which kind of makes you feel a little bit off base, like there's no solid ground really in the music.
Exactly. There is this idea of transparency because it's never heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It's never vertical in the sense of heaviness.
Yeah.
It explores the light, therefore transparency, and it's extremely sensual.
Mm-hmm.
The harmonies, you know, are extremely sensual.
I can hear that. That's really beautiful. And I want to have some more examples, but first I think we need to take a break for some sponsor info. This episode of Classical Classroom is sponsored by Maestro Classics. They're the creators of Stories and Music, which is this recorded series that they made for kids and families. It's won more than 50 awards, not to mention general adoration from the people who listen to it. It features the London Philharmonic Orchestra, and it takes those musical stories and it like brings them to life. It's one of those things where kids learn while they're having fun without actually knowing that they're learning. And there's an activity book that goes along with it. It's a whole thing. Maestro Classics just announced a brand new recording in this series called Bach and the Organ. It's all about J.S. Bach, who you may have heard of on this very show, and it tells the story of his life while talking about the pipe organ, which, P.S., back in the day, was the most advanced mechanical instrument that had ever existed. And you can learn more about this album and the rest of the series at maestroclassics.com, and... wait for it. You can also save 17% off of your order by using coupon code CLASSROOM. Yay! And here, as promised, is your other present. As you may be aware, we have finally started offering Classical Classroom swag, which you can find by going to our website, classicalclassroomshow.com, and clicking on the Get Merch button. But here is the present. We're having a contest, and the winner will get their very own Classical Classroom t-shirt. So here's how to play. The first person to correctly identify all of the voices in our show intro, you know, the one with the music under it and stuff, and to email that answer, a correct answer, to classicalclassroomshow@gmail.com, wins. We'll email you to let you know that you've won, and to get your size info and shipping info and all that good stuff. Be the first person to correctly identify all of the voices in our show intro and email it to classicalclassroomshow@gmail.com, and you could win a Classical Classroom t-shirt with my big old face on it. It's kind of small, actually. It's not that big. And now back to my class on French music and French composers with conductor Stéphane Deneuve. What else is a good example? Because you were saying that this is a very important period in French music. So who's another good example?
Well, of course, possibly my favorite composer, even if that's maybe a bit stupid to say something like that, but I feel so close to Claude Achille Debussy. I mean, Debussy is a free thinker, is a man who said, "There is only one rule, my pleasure." And he wrote music that was so special. He started with a prelude of The Afternoon of a Faun very early, actually, in 1893. And he really incarnates, if I may say, embodies all the French values, you know, this rich sensual harmony, this elegance, this transparency, this visual aspect. And it's never sentimental.
Yeah.
And what I would like to say is it can describe many different moods. Often when we think about Impressionism, we have this vision of course, this watery, blurry, and it's all this kind of same Monet painting. And it can be a lot of other things. So, for instance, if you listen to Fête of Debussy, you will see that he can write those visual impressions with a music which is extremely festive and extremely articulated and somehow very dry as well. So it's not only watery.
Yeah, let's hear some of that. Bit of the Berlioz that we heard.
Absolutely.
It's like way more structured than that.
Well, you're very right. It has this extremely articulated way of playing. And even if we have the sensual harmonies that he has, you know, that are almost jazzistic harmonies, to be honest with you, it's a bit technical, but with a lot of ninth and 11th chord. So this harmony that later a lot of jazzmen will use to be smooth. At the same time, Debussy's used some rhythm, so the ta 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 ta, to articulate those harmonies in a way that is rhythmically festive and full of energy. So I just wanted to illustrate the fact that Impressionist music is not only just blurry and watery, it can be also extremely clear. So the fact is, Debussy is a composer I love, but often people say Ravel, Debussy, like if there were only those composers. And there are many more great composers at that time of history. But there is one especially, I would say we should speak about a trio, not a duo, but a trio with Ravel, Debussy and Roussel. I'm a huge fan of Albert Roussel. He's a little bit neglected compared to Ravel and Debussy. But if you listen to an excerpt from his famous ballet, Bacchus and Ariane, the Dionysian spell, you will hear that it is the same level of very colorful music and very impressionistic.
Okay. That triangle in the background sounds like a phone ringing.
Ding, ding. Yes. Actually, of course, for the same reason, to just give a lot of different timbre and colors, the composers, the French composers of this time, use a lot of percussion. So you will hear a lot of, of course, triangles and cymbals and a lot of others, xylophones and other percussion in many ways, just to give these sounds. And what I love is also, which is very important, and it's important for people interested in the way French composer orchestrate. For very long, basically the full 19th century, basically the winds and the brass would often be used as a way to sustain a harmony, and the strings will speak the music on top of it. So if you hear, of course, a lot of music from, I don't know, from Wagner, from then Strauss, you will hear this German way to have a very solid, we say in French, fond d'orchestre, so, which means the background of the music would be solid tenutos by the winds and brass, and then the strings would kind of speak the romantic melodies. And often in French music, it's exactly the opposite, which means that often it will be the string that will create the background of the music. And the fact that the strings, of course, are more transparent, more evanescent, can play extremely soft, will allow this kind of a very transparent and pastel background. And on top of it, then it's more the woodwinds themselves that would speak with all their differences, you know, the very clear colors of a flute, clear color of an oboe, clear color of bassoon. And this is, by the way, something which I think is a very important subject as well about French style, which is the specificity of a French orchestra, the specificity of the color, the timbre of the instruments.
So what I'm hearing is that woodwind players are big fans of French music because they actually get to play when it's time to perform.
Yes, it is true that in French music, they rarely only have to sustain harmonies like an organ, you know. Uh-huh. It's quite interesting. If you hear German conductors, often they really try to use the orchestra as an organ, trying to mix all the different timbres to create a magnificent general timbre. So then they will try to have the flutes being not too different when they do this, when they sustain big harmonies, as clarinet, not too different as bassoons, as oboe, in order to create, once again, a very pure abstract harmony, mixing this instrument. And in French music, it's exactly the opposite. You try to really use the character of each woodwind instrument, and it's almost the only goal is to try to make it very distinctive. And that's quite interesting that in French orchestras you would have sounds that are so different from one from another. You know, you have first the French bassoons that were used, of course, in France, which are specific to France, which are much more woody and nasal somehow, and lighter than the German bassoons. And then you would have the oboe being very acidic, you know, very kind of like a duck sound somehow, and the flute being extremely aerial and evanescent. And so those instruments would not mix. They would be like very specific different characters.
Yeah, we should hear some of that. I think that's really fascinating that like other kinds of music composed for orchestra are basically composed in the exact opposite way from French music. Like you're sort of like home base are totally different instruments.
Yes, and I think it's a culture which comes also a lot from the French Revolution. Because what happened in the French Revolution is that the new people in power try to unify the people with a lot of festive music played open air. And so a lot of harmony, fanfares were created to be played in events outside, open air. And so you would have indeed this many, many different woodwind instruments created for this occasion. And Berlioz once again actually wrote, which is incredible, very early in the mid-19th century, he wrote a famous treatise, a book actually explaining how to mix all woodwind instruments, and it's an art. And you really feel when you read this book of Berlioz that he really tried to identify every woodwind brass instrument and explain what they can achieve, the different tessiture, the different color, and the different emotions, as you said before, the different impressions that you get if you mix them together. And that is very specific to, indeed, the French style. If you may, I think what would be interesting now maybe is to hear the difference between
yeah, I want to hear this.
Non-French orchestra and French orchestra. I'd like to show you something, if you may. I will use one of my favorite pieces ever, the famous The Sea, La Mer from Debussy. And here is a story. I'd like to show you different things at the same time. One is, if you may, we'll try to compare with a little excerpt the different colors of the woodwinds used, for instance, and how they sound, but also the rhythmical aspect. And I will explain you something to you. Look, we've all explained with the Gregorian music, the solfège, this very free way to articulate music in an horizontal way without being victim of a kind of pulse obliging you to go to this pulse and to reunite at every pulse. That changed totally the way of phrasing, of just interpreting French music. So in La Mer, at the beginning of La Mer, you will hear a phrase in the flutes, which is a very lovely phrase, very fresh. It's like we say l'écume de la mer, you know, this little white foam at the wave of the sea.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
sea foam.
So, voilà, the sea foam, that's beautiful. Yeah. And so, to describe that somehow, maybe, Debussy used the flutes and he does this rhythm. Ta-ta-ta-ta, ta-ta-ti-ta-ta-ta-ti. And if you are French, you would just actually phrase it as it comes with just the length of the note and nothing more. No pulse, but just short, 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 long, short, 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 long, long, and very freely and lightly, transparently. But if you are another culture, you may actually be victim of your habit to use big pulse to reunite, and then it becomes a kind of valse doing ti-da-da-da, ta-da-di-da-da-da-di, with a 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, ti-da-da-da, and then to the risk of maybe elongating the first note, ti-da-da-da, instead of having ti-ta-ta-ta, ta-ta-ti-ta-ta-ti. So if you may, I just wanted you to hear it. So let's hear for a few seconds the Concertgebouw Orchestra. It's of course all good. Huh? It's a great orchestra, not French, but great, with Marie Stenson. So okay. Listen to interpretation. And now. Okay. So you heard ti-da-da-da with a kind of deep first note. Deeper first note, ta 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 ta, and a kind of very directional way to go for the next pulse, ta 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 ta. So it sounds like a kind of, yeah, I would say a kind of heavy valse.
Yeah.
And now try to compare that to an orchestra which is actually, I want it to be fair, which is not French, but is considered one of the most French orchestra. It's in Swiss, and because of its conductor, was a friend of Debussy, Ernest Ansermet. And here's the difference between what you just heard, this ti-da-da-da, and what you will hear just now.
Okay. Totally different.
Let's hear this triplet just again, that you hear the flutes playing instead of ti-da-da-da, which personally I don't like, by the way. Let's just ti-da-da-da. Let's hear it again. And you hear how fluid, how transparent, you hear every part of the orchestra very clearly, and I love that. And you can also hear these qualities now with finally a purely French orchestra, the Orchestre National de France, and Désiré-Émile Engelbrecht, who also was a close friend of Debussy and knew him very well. So So you hear extremely distinctive mm-hmm. timbre. And exactly when we stop, you could hear a few notes just of the horns playing with this very sweet little vibrato that was kind of the fashion at the time. And this is really totally a French style of playing. If you may, I'd like to continue the comparison and now go to the very end of La Mer, this fantastic climatic moment. With all my respect, of course, I'm not here to criticize, but just to understand the different concept about French way of playing in an orchestra and German way. A fabulous orchestra, of course, that we all love, the Berlin Philharmonic with Karajan. And you will hear how Karajan tried to mix all the different types of the orchestra in a very polished, very design way that is actually totally not French, if I may say, and how the famous chorale of brass at the end, ta 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 ta, how this will be extremely sostenuto, very noble, very kind of Brucknerian, very Wagnerian, extremely beautiful, by the way, but with a big accent, big German accent, because it's totally not the French style. So let's hear the end of La Mer. You heard ti 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 pa, quite heavy, quite really Wagnerian. I mean,
yeah, it's very big sounding. It's like
exactly,
yeah.
And basically, even the little decoration with the strings, and it's all mixed into one big soup and one big sound mixed. And now, compared to the mad and my hero, Charles Munch, with Orchestral de France, it is really, I promise you, it is exactly the same music, but here how it will be articulated, how it will be free rhythmically and super French.
So this is a French take on French music.
Exactly.
Okay, got it. Like really big and bombastic, but I hear kind of what you're saying, how there's more sort of like, I feel like from note to note, it's just like on the surface hopping from note to note to note to note.
Exactly. It's extremely articulated, and because there is much less sostenuto, you know, then you hear the background, because the notes are just naturally released so quickly that you can hear all the layers of the music. So you get, instead of ta 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 ta, you hear ta 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 ta, and then between those notes you hear pa 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 pa, you hear all the little thing, and then you hear the piccolo pa da pa da, just screaming with a very clear timbre, and you hear the trumpet being very pointy, and it's just a different world.
Very.
And just to really just make my point, there is also something about the tempo that French conductors in general and the French music goes fast. You know, normally French music is the French pieces are quite shorter than the equivalent music of the time. We don't have long development. Debussy said when he was listening to Brahms, he was wrong, by the way, but still he could not stand Brahms symphony and say like, oh my God, he will develop again. And he was scared by this idea of long development and the idea of being too heavy, too metaphysical, and to be basically boring. That was really extremely, for French people, you have to be concise, you have to say things quickly, and so the tempo has had to be brisk, and so to just make my point, listen to this very weird version of Cheli Bidaki, great conductor for some repertoire, but in this La Mer, it's way too slow. Half tempo.
Yeah.
From Munch. And so legato. Da, you see?
Yeah. I feel like
anything
I'm,
to the courage.
I'm drowning in the sea right now.
You see how heavy?
Yeah. It sounds almost like cartoon music, too, for some reason.
If we could just right away listen to the Munch, the version before, you would see that's totally a different world.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just basically twice faster and with this speaking quality. I think it's an important thing as well for the French music. It's just, it speaks a lot.
Yeah, and it seems important for French music to sort of be at that particular speaking tempo. Like, that's part of what makes it sound French. But, you know, like, thinking about this, what's going on in French music today? Like, where is it headed?
Okay, I will say something a bit controversial, forgive me, and maybe a little bit too proud, but somehow I have a feeling that in many places of the world, kind of this idea of impressionism kind of won. And you would hear, actually, a lot of composers from all over the world. I think the way of using the orchestra as a visual description and is very French. And if you think in UK, for instance, you would have Oliver Nussen or George Benjamin. We unfortunately lost Oliver Nussen a few years ago, but Benjamin is an English composer, yet he uses the orchestra with a lot of French style in the detailed orchestration, in the way of doing a lot of different lights and then you have, I don't know, for instance, in Finland, you know, Kaija Saarijaho is also using so many textures that sound extremely French in the way to use the orchestra. And so Magnus Lindberg, who is a big fan of Ravel, same for, I don't know, in Germany, Detlef Glanert is also writing a music which is very Germanic, of course, very inspired by Brahms, for instance, but still with this way to orchestrate, to use the orchestra, influenced by Ravel, influenced by the French way. So I'm very pleased to say that the French style is actually continuing, not only in France. And in France, I must say, we do have plenty of composers, Fabien Waxman, Thierry Esquèche, Richard Dubunion, Pascal Zavaro, Pascal Dussapin, Marc-Henri d'Albavi, Camille Pépin, a very young, wonderful new composer in France. And for me, my favorite one right now, I have to say, is Guillaume Connaisson. I adore his music. He's about my age, and I recorded a lot of his music, and he's continuing what all those composers from France have done with this sensual harmony, this colorful way of using the orchestra, all this impressionistic way to use the different timbres of the orchestra. And he's not describing La Mer anymore, he's going further, he's describing the universe, he's describing the planets, but it is indeed the French style.
Oh, I want to hear that.
Thank you.
sounds like movie music to me.
Yes.
From like the 1950s, like Rebel Without a Cause or something like that.
So this is a piece called Supernova, describing a supernova. And yes, you are very right that what happened is that in the 20th century, the symphonic music also had a great new repertoire thanks to the movies. And what the movie do is try to describe and help the mood, the atmosphere, the different scenarios and characters, and therefore have the same kind of values as the French music that I was describing. I mean, when I spoke about the Symphonie Fantastique of Berlioz, it was, in a way, a psychedelic movie before movie was invented. It was Hollywood before Hollywood. And so you're very right that a lot of movie music could be qualified as impressionistic or slightly French sometimes. And this music of Guillaume Connaisson has this kind of visual quality. And he wrote many, many, many great pieces. I've recorded already 4 CDs of his music. And very, if I may say that myself, I'm so enthusiastic and passionate about his music. I please encourage people to go listen to all the music of Guillaume Connaisson, C-O-N-N-E-S-S-O-N, Connaisson.
Yeah. And we'll put links to this up on the website too.
He's the future of French music. It's alive and it will be there for a very long time, as I hope French culture as well, all over the world, thanks to our wine and cuisine.
Well, Stéphane, this has been incredible. I am like, I've learned so much today, and it kind of seems like what's remarkable to me about French music, after having gotten this kind of intense, consolidated overview of it, is that it's sort of been weirdly the same since the beginning. It's got this very consistent characteristic to it, where it's emotive, it's describing the world around, it's sort of very engaged with the world outside of the self. It's very, when you listen to it, you're experiencing the feeling of something as opposed to sort of thinking deeply about, not that it's like superficial or anything like that, but like it really works on an emotional level more than some other music, you know?
I could not be happier with what you just said, because indeed, I think sometimes I have myself suffered from the idea that basically, you know, Beethoven, Brahms, Bruckner, Wagner would be deep music because they speak about man, they speak about metaphysics, they speak about humanistic values, and that French music would be actually somehow, you know, superficial and on the surface and kind of decorative. And actually, I really believe that it is not the case, in the sense that it depends how you see, what is your attitude with the world. And as we have always more environmental concerns with the world, we understand that it is very important that we are connected to the world we are in. And despite being often descriptive or visual, the French music, I think it has a structure behind that is in sync with the depth of the world, and that what I search in it, and that what makes it really also very, very deep.
It's mindful. It's like it's paying attention to what's going on around, instead of being like sort of you know, solipsistic and just sort of pulled into the self. It's like I said, it's sort of engaged in like observing what's happening in this.
Absolutely.
This,
I mean, sometimes a short haiku from Japan poetry, a little poem from French culture, I believe could say in a very concise way as much about men, as much about metaphysics as, you know, some very heavy literature from some German philosopher. I think it's both of them are important and interesting, but we should not indeed just put one above the other. I think they're both valid to try to make us understand the world better and be happier.
Agree. Well, Stéphane Deneuve, this has been amazing. I feel like I have been on a journey of sound today. I really, really appreciate it. This has been a great lesson. And thanks for taking the time to do it.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you for your patience. And, well, I hope you will come visit us in St. Louis to hear a lot of music of every composer, but also some French music exquisitely
played. But mostly
played,
the French ones.
Played by the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, who I adore. I'm so proud. I love them.
Well, Stefan, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Au revoir.
Au revoir. All right, everyone, that does it for this epic episode of Classical Classroom. For more Classroom, head over to classicalclassroomshow.com, where you can find all of our episodes forever, ways to connect with us, ways to support the show financially, and where to buy Classical Classroom merch. Don't forget to subscribe to rate and review the show wherever you listen. It helps a lot. And we love hearing your comments. Hearing your comments? And we love reading your comments. Thanks to the birthplace of Classical Classroom, Houston Public Media. Thanks to the official virtual meeting background provider of Classical Classroom, Streaker. Streaker provides a naked person to streak across your screen during important meetings at random intervals. Thanks to Stefan Deneuve for being on the show. It was great to meet both you and your amazing hairless cat, Stefan. Thanks to me for saying words, but most of all, thanks to you for listening. Au revoir, Pee-wee! Au revoir!
Au revoir, Simone!